I've been busy, but am I busy in the right direction, right? Am I busy moving towards the person I want to be, in the place I want to be, making an impact like I want to make? And I found some things that are helpful in that regard are like...
Hello and welcome to Salesforce Trails and Trials, where two Salesforce architects and special guests share their wins and woes so that you can learn with us.
How's it been? A couple weeks.
Welcome buenos back. Buenos dias. How are you?
Oh, buenos dias. Some Spanish. I love it.
You know, do you ever go to a country and you're like, I just came back from Mexico and we took all the precautions and blah, blah, blah. But do you ever feel like you pick up a little language when you go to another country?
Sure. I pick up the accent at least. Right.
Also, I found myself saying, hola, amigo. You know, when I'm walking around the hotel, I hope I'm not being offensive in saying that. But anyways, everybody seemed to be talking that way. So yeah, buenos dias.
Awesome. Well, and you might hear in the background, my cat Willow is really excited about your trip too. And so she'll be kind of chiming in from time to time. Yeah. So she thinks she's a lion. And so, you know, she's very vocal. Well, that's wonderful. I went camping. So while you were in Mexico, I went camping and, you know, was living the off the grid life, just playing guitar around the fire pit. And
perfect.
Oh yeah, enjoyed a little time away, which is really nice.
Unplugging.
So it's great to be back. Super fun. A lot of driving, but good time with my youngest, my 8-year-old, which is very fun.
So did you drive like halfway up the state? How far did you go?
I don't know if it was halfway, but it was, I go up through Fresno, and then from there we go just a little more north to a place called Courtright Reservoir. And it's an amazing,
so it's like 4 or 5 hours to get there.
It's exactly.
Okay.
So awesome. It's a big state. I think it takes about 13 hours to drive across the state. So
yep.
Pretty big state. Well, good. Well, it's great to be back and, great listeners to have you with us. So let's chat a little bit about, what we learned lately. So how about you get started first?
Well, let's see. So I mentioned Mexico. So I think, it was surprising. So anyways, we got down there and we were traveling with friends and we're going to stay together. We're going to cook in the same apartment. So we needed to go to Walmart once we got to our hotel. And so first of all, there's Walmart in Mexico. Second of all, we took a taxi to Walmart. We got there, but we weren't sure how we were going to get home. We figured, well, hopefully Uber will work. But that was the later problem. We had other problems to solve first, like how do I figure out what these ground meats are?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the words for turkey or, you know, pork or whatever, when I'm looking in the deli section of Walmart. And then I thought, oh, I have Google Translate. So I walked up to the, you know, deli counter and they all these prepackaged cheeses and deli meats and stuff like that. We thought we'd make sandwiches at lunch instead of paying every day for like a, you know, $40 a person lunch by the pool. And I just turned on Google Translate, put in camera mode and started reading the label in English.
Wow.
So that was amazing. And I learned, now I don't remember it now, but I learned the word for, you know, pork and turkey and ham and, you know, or you know, roast beef, or I forget what the alternative was.
So you didn't have to actually say anything into the translate. Right. You just took a picture of the words.
Yeah, you actually real time. It's amazing. I've done this multiple times, either for menus or if you ever get documentation for a product in Chinese or Japanese or something else, and there's no English version. My friend got an exotic, fancy toaster from Japan that is just dialed in to give you the steamiest, crispiest piece of toast. But the documentation was all in Japanese. And so we didn't know what the buttons did. You can just hold up your phone to the documentation. You can see like the video of what's, you know, your phone's looking at. And then bit by bit, it knows how to do optical character recognition and figure out where the text is on the screen. And then it sends that in strings over to a translation service. And then it comes back and it slowly populates it and replaces it overlays the translated word on top of the original word. So if you hold it still and long enough, and you're connected to, you know, your 4G connection with data, slowly but surely, you know, in 5 seconds, you'll have an English translation of whatever you're looking at. And so that was handy.
That is great.
So we figured out how to get our supplies. And then we're like, well, how do we get home? It turns out Uber worked great there too. We're in Puerto Vallarta. And so we were able to get the Uber. He took us home 3 miles. It was easy. And it was just like, once again, you know, the internet will suck our time, but it actually has good uses too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, traveling, that's been one of the ones that saved me more than once. Just relying on like either driving, Waze, Uber, just makes it easy to get mm-hmm. around foreign countries.
That's super useful. And you know, all the learning you can have, right? Menus at restaurants, street signs
totally.
Can save you from a lot of potential perils, right?
Totally.
That's pretty sweet. I got to give that a try. It's amazing. It's free, you know, it's crazy.
I know.
Well, one thing I learned was that, you know, those folks over at Unofficial SF are always hard at work, and they recently released what's called the validation checker for Flow. And we had an issue where, you know, we have these, you know, sometimes you can create really complicated screen flows and, mm-hmm. you know, there's a little bit of conditional logic, and the screen flows rely on certain things being assumed or true. For example, hey, you're not going to put any arbitrary validation rules on, you know, saving data to all of these fields through the flow. Because the flow right. is essentially like
flow...
it's an abstracted view, right? So I'm out of the page layout and, uh-huh. you know, there might be other conditions that I'm not aware of when I'm in the flow. And so if you put a validation rule on there that says, hey, unless field A is filled out, you know, you can't save with field B, but I haven't included field A in the flow, then it's going to break the flow. Or if somebody changes fields, you know, like a field level security or, you know, anything on the object permissions, whatever it might be. So anyone who's gone through this with a flow, how do you debug a flow? Well, you know, there's the flow debugger, which is helpful. That's much better than it used to be. And there's also that big, long email, which is where a lot of the more complicated right. errors, and everybody loves sorting through that. In fact, finding out who has the email and where is it is always a good part of the process, right? Who last worked on this or who created this flow and where is their email inbox and is it still accessible? So what I love about this component is it's proactive. So wouldn't it be better, rather than simply kind of catching and avoiding the errors, but wouldn't it be better to actually have a way to anticipate that an error is likely and to present a choice back to the user to say, hey, just so you know, there's likely a validation rule or another issue on this form. So what would you like to do? Would you like to save where you are and continue later? Or would you like to restart from the beginning? Or would you like to continue and see if it all works out? You can actually mm-hmm. give that kind of signaling and decision back to the user using this component, because the component looks at what we're working with, kind of goes downstream, does all the kind of preemptive, proactive work, and comes back and says, there won't be any error, or there will be an error and it's of this type.
Cool. Yeah, and so really, is this really just cool a component too. You drop into the flow? Or
this is a component you drop in the flow. Exactly. You just install it from Unofficial SF and it just becomes part of your kind of palette of components that, you know, like Git record and all of that. You just have mm-hmm. the validation checker as one of your items. So definitely a really good one for people who are growing in flow, which everyone in the Salesforce ecosystem should be growing in flow, or, you know, mm-hmm. flowing to grow, right? However you want to say it.
Okay.
So the other thing I'll highlight what I learned, which was on Father's Day, I get to pick the agenda for whatever my family wants to do. So we went up to Oxnard and I love, you know, I never met an information sign I didn't like. And so I learned about the Levy brothers, right? I always love to hear about like, what's the Jewish history in this place, right? So there were two brothers up in Oxnard. the Levy brothers.
Are we talking 1850s or 1900s? This is,
probably late 1800s. And they were kind of money guys, right? And so they helped fund a lot of the early farms that enabled Oxnard to be what it was, right? And it was a really big sugar beet like location, and that port, Wainimi. Yeah, it was a really big, they put it there for the sugar beet crops. And these guys have two really cool craftsman houses that are still there. So you can go drive by the house and check it out. It was fun to learn about. And one little known fact is that Henry Oxnard did not want the city named after himself. He wanted it named for the sugar beets. And so sugar in Greek is Zachary. So he wanted... Uh-huh. The city named Zachary, which is funny because there's two Zacharies on our team, but he couldn't, like, the board and the city government or whatever wouldn't have it. So they just said, no, we're just going to name it after you. And he's like, whatever.
Okay. Great.
So now we have Oxnard.
I want to plug in something here, which I think is great. You never found an information sign that you didn't like. I'm the same way. But my wife and daughter have no patience for me stopping and reading the signs.
Agreed.
I think you told me on your Father's Day, when you say we're going somewhere and we're doing what I want to do, there will be no complaints.
There will be no complaints.
Daddy gets
to stop my agenda. Exactly.
And he gets to say, oh, look, interesting.
Look,
and there
at
are no
this.
Snide remarks from the peanut gallery. If I want to stop and read this and find out why this
it's
house
my
is
day.
Important in history. It's yes. your day. I think
it's
that's
my
a,
day.
Like, I'm always, I never know what to ask for Father's Day, but, like, you know, let's go do what I want to do. And let's all be on my team.
Absolutely. And when I'm in the car and I say, you know, did you guys know that ABC, everybody has to go, really? That is so interesting.
Does that only work on Father's Day?
Yes. Every other day they're like, no, Dad, we don't want to learn anything right now.
Yeah, I know.
Well, this is why I love our chat conversations together, because it is a small fraternity of the people who will always have patience for a little bit of learning and curiosity. So awesome. Great learning. And I will make sure and give that a try next time. I'm going to try it. Like, next time I go get Chinese food, if I can get a menu that has Chinese.
Try the Google Translate. You got to download it first. So do that ahead of time.
Okay.
But yeah, it's, you know, another story about Google Translate. This is from now 2 years ago. We went to Europe. I grew up in Europe when I was little, and I'm visiting my childhood friend, and he has a daughter my daughter's age, and she doesn't speak English, and my daughter doesn't speak French. And so we're busy, catching up with the parents. And I gave my daughter my phone. I said, look, this is how this is going to work. You use Google Translate to play with this girl. And they're 9 years old, 8 years old, and they go and play Barbie in the back room. I showed her how to use it. And so one kid would go click on the translate button where you could speak into it. And like Eleanor, the daughter, said in French, okay, honey, I'm home. What should we do for dinner? And then hit translate. And in English, it comes out, honey, I'm home. What should we do for dinner? And then my daughter hears it and goes, and then goes back to the phone, pushes the record button and says, I don't know, how about hamburgers? And it goes and translates it in French and says, je ne sais pas, est-ce que vous mangez des hamburgers? You know, and it was
this
cool robot between my daughter, who was 8 or 9 or whatever, and this girl who, you know, they had to have the patience to push the button and wait for the response. So it's a little bit asynchronous, but I mean,
but they kind of like the tech
together for like an hour.
Yes.
And it's geeky. They both got to play with an iPhone. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to give an analog version of that. Yes. So my wife had her friends. So she went to Norway before we got married. She had some friends over there for a wedding. And so those friends came over to our house a couple of years ago, and the daughter doesn't know any English, right? So she's from Norway, same age, 8 or 9. So my daughter, they went up and they went to play in the room, right? So I went over and just was curious because it was really quiet. There was no talking. And so I was there and they both had Frozen, right? So they like had dresses on from Frozen, and they had like books from Frozen, and they were just like because Frozen is based off of kind of Scandinavian legend and all of that, right? And so they both had it, right? And they were just pointing and thumbs up and like all of this and like reading it. It was so cute. And they were up there for over an hour. It's like the quietest play date my daughter has ever had.
Yeah.
It was so great. Yeah. I love it.
And we're talking about that now, but if I don't, as adults, we still do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you just have to go deep in Thailand, deep to another country where mm-hmm. there is no English. You don't speak their language and you end up still doing the same thing. You talk about gestures and thumbs up.
Yes.
And miming and charades and yeah,
it's cool. A really good exercise. I mean, the amount of learning you get around the subtleties of nonverbal communication you gain from that, right? Mm-hmm. Going back into my never stop learning kind of bent, but yeah. That's a really good exercise to do because that's really useful in our everyday life, even when people are speaking English, because they might say totally. Something, but their nonverbal communication says something very different. Well, good. Well, let's move on to our next segment, which is one small thing that did have big consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll start with mine here. You know, I had a boss, his name's Paul, and was really one of the best, it was one of the few times I had a regular job. And this was really my transition into my kind of self-employed state, was when I worked at the American Film Institute years ago. And essentially for me, I guess a pragmatist, right? Like I don't think of myself having like, you know, I'm being part of factions and being territorial and all of this. I just want to help people. Yeah. Nothing to hide. Yeah. I just want to help people. And if there's something mm-hmm. that's like, you know, available to me that will help someone else, I figure everybody's like that, of course. And so
how old were you at this time?
I was probably 22.
Yeah.
You know, I was like just out of college and it was really my first big job. You know, I like before that, I was like making money, like right around the poverty line, you know, doing odd jobs or whatever. So I went and essentially, you know, I was in IT. And so somebody was like, hey, I need some help with this or that. And I think it was related to a software license. And I recall my boss talking about like, oh, I just got those licenses in and whatever. I went and I was like, oh, okay. He wasn't there. He was out to lunch or whatever. And I was like, oh, it's like, maybe it's in his inbox, you know, like back in the day, people have like a little inbox on their desk, an actual paper inbox, not an email inbox. Right. Mm-hmm. So I just go and I just shift and I saw, oh yeah, there it was, right. It's like the second page under his inbox. So I just got the license keys, whatever. And like took care of the customer, took care of my user's issue. So helpful. Yeah. Right. And I put everything back. Right. And about a couple hours later, I don't know whether he noticed some, you know, maybe I didn't put it back exactly as it was. Cause look, I don't think I'm doing anything wrong. I don't need to cover my tracks or doing anything like that. Mm-hmm. He called me into his office and he got really angry with me. And he was like, don't you ever come into my office and take something off my desk. I'm like, whoa, you know, I didn't take anything off your desk. I used some school property on your desk, which are these licenses to like help out, but he got really bit out of shape. Because he just felt like I kind of, you know, went into his territory and his protected space. And so what it did for me is it showed me that, you know, I need to be a little more sensitive to other people's space. And, you know, we didn't know each other that well. I mean, I'd only been working there a few months. And so I probably should have prioritized kind of confirming it with him before just solving, you know, my user's issue. Because maybe it wasn't that, you know, it wasn't hair on fire urgent anyway. And just kind of showed me that, you know, I gotta just slow down a little bit and make sure I'm kind of like, you know, rightly ordering the trains on the track. And, but it had a big consequence because it was like I feel like it eroded a little trust that he had with me, right? Like after that, he started locking his door to his office. Mm-hmm. And I think we made up for it. We ended up working together for 3+ years and he became a client at my next startup and all of that. But it was very unexpected for me. And, you know, definitely had some positive consequences and it helped me be more sensitive and aware of how I'm ordering things and who I'm prioritizing.
I think it's a good reminder. So now, like, you know, you and I have been professionals for many years. But we forget what it was like when we started working. And as we work with young people, you know, whatever, graduates, 18-year-olds, they could be interns or whatever, they don't really know the context of all that goes on in an organization and why things might be different. And I did other things that were similar to that, where it's like, you look back now and you're like, what was I thinking? Why would I do that so openly? Mm-hmm. And at work, that's not a work activity. That's a leisure activity. Whatever I was doing, I was reading a book. I was like a temp one time and I had nothing to do and nobody was calling the phone. So I brought a book, and then my next job, I had nothing to do. So I did what the temp agency told me to do. I brought a book. You know, I was like 18 or 19, whatever. You can't do that. So it just, from, you know, somehow people need to learn these things. And if, you know, when I came out of school, I went to Anderson Consulting Accenture, and there was all this emphasis on, they gave us a book on how to become professional and the transition from college to business and the things that are no longer acceptable and things like that. And so they made an attempt to show us things like that. But, you know, I don't know. I doubt most companies do that. And mm-hmm. we, who have been professional for years, forget that people coming out of college, you know, they don't understand like OPWAD, other people's passwords are dangerous, mm-hmm. or, you know, why, what is a secret? Well, what your department's doing with its money, or what the headcount situation is, or whatever, that is a secret. That mm-hmm. is not shared below a certain level. That's not mm-hmm. shared aside to another department. But you don't know that, because coming out of college, what was there? It's my email password. Who cares if someone gets my email? Mm-hmm. That was the only secret you had, or maybe mm-hmm. your bank account, you know, password. But it's just, you don't know coming out of college, or you may not know, like, it's a little bit more complicated, and there are secrets that
yeah.
exist. And management is a secret. Mm-hmm. Management is enforcement of processes. But management is also like shielding you from the information you don't need to know, because mm-hmm. we got to keep things organized and calm and stable. And, you know, it's just yep. like,
I yeah, management. Totally,
I'm citing. Go ahead.
No, it's good. Management's agreements with you, and, you know, you're kind of like the details of what's happening, what's not happening, what you're getting, what's, you know, what someone else is getting. Yeah. Those exactly. are all secrets. And so it's very unique. Every business has their own set of kind of context for that.
Yeah. So, and I say secrets, everybody has secrets. You have to have secrets. And if everything's totally open, you can't have structure. We can mm-hmm. get into this a longer debate, but my point is, like, there's reasons to keep things hidden. This is not an anti-management comment, and I don't feel suspicious. At least I'm lucky not to feel suspicious of my management. I think there are probably people who don't feel that way about their bosses, but in general, it's like, you know, you don't know how the sausage is made at work. And mm-hmm. you become a manager and you're like, you mean this is basically elective and it's only us managers who are enforcing this rule because the process runs better if we make people do it this way? Yep, that's the way it is. Huh, I never would have imagined that. Okay, cool. But you don't see that behind the curtain sure. until you're a manager.
Right. Right. No, and there's like a benefit to that too. You know, it's less stressful. But yeah. tell us your story about one thing that had a big consequence.
So mine's a little bit like yours. I was early, I don't know, I was 4 years into my Accenture career, and I was working with a client, and my job was to help them through a vendor evaluation. And kind of like you, I'm an open book. I felt like I was, I had the client's best interest at heart when I was doing my research. And so they're trying to find a certain kind of software. And so we had 3 or 4 vendors come in, and I'm in charge of like capturing requirements and then, you know, checking off, you know, how well does each vendor match requirements and stuff like that. And I forget exactly how it happened, but I just cut to the chase. And I said, like, I've worked with these 4 vendors before, and this is the one that does everything you want. And I think I said that out of frustration, because I think my client was questioning me, or questioning whether I was, I don't know, there was some question going on. And you know, whatever I said in the meeting was, it was argumentative probably, or defensive. It was probably like, of course I'm looking out for you, you know, something like that. And this is what I think the answer is. I think it was the client who said to me, you are my consultant, not to give me the right answer, but to take me through the process to understand the right answer and to develop my opinion. Because based on what you show me, and I'm going to, you know, poke on your opinions and your, you know, answers that you say you got from these vendors, then the client's going to make the decision. But it's not your decision as the consultant to say, this is what the answer is. It's almost like in school, you have to show your work. Mm-hmm. There had to be work to mm-hmm. show that this vendor evaluation was thorough. And I thought I was doing a thorough job, but I also felt like, you know, there's a couple of people on the short list that probably shouldn't be on the short list. And the takeaway was, in that case, as an advisor, my job was to lead my customer to the answer. And it could have been the answer I wanted. I really was indifferent. I didn't care which answer it was. But in general, like, I didn't understand, like, hey, I've worked with these four vendors five times before. I know what they all do. You're not that different from what I did last time with them. And, you know, obviously I was in the wrong. And that's one of those things I took with me, and that, like, it's not about having the answer sometimes. It's if you're trying to communicate or motivate someone to go in a different direction, you can't just say it. You have to set up the context for them mm-hmm. to figure out that the answer is, you know, whatever the answer is. Mm-hmm. So I know it's kind of vague. I'm trying to be professionally vague.
That's good.
But that was one that was like, that did not feel good when it was happening. And so it's memorable.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. It's made an imprint, but it's really good. I mean, that taps into a lot of the, you know, people will, they're much more confident about decisions that they come to themselves rather than having mm-hmm. someone dictate to them what they think it's sure. going to be. And two, it helps to like put the risk where it's supposed to go. Right. So that, you know, mm-hmm. the your client is not outsourcing their decision-making to you. They're asking yeah. you to inform them so they can make an educated decision on their own, but they need to make the decision themselves. And that's a really key point yeah. for consultants to, you know, and others to keep, is that we leave the decision-making to the people who are kind of signed up to take the risk, and yeah. that we provide them due diligence to back up their decision. Like, because somebody's going to push back on them, or let's say it doesn't work out, right? You go back to those artifacts and you're like, well, here's why we made the decision. And based on what we see now, it was a good decision to make, even though we see now that it didn't work out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the way you summarize that, because it applies not just to consultants. I'm imagining Salesforce admins or IT analysts who are mm-hmm. working with the business. Often, I don't know how often it's, half the time, there's a percentage where it's the business who signs off on buying Salesforce, and they need to remember or be involved in why, or lead the decision on why they're going to spend whatever X mm-hmm. amount of money on Salesforce. I've heard a lot of IT people talk about how we are partners, where we help our business counterparts make decisions. We bring the information, you know, we're the analysts, you know, we help them through it. But in the end, it's not always IT that signs the check. Mm-hmm. So it applies even outside consulting.
Yep, I agree. It's very good. Awesome. So let's transition now to one of our newer segments, which is Tools of the Trail.
Yes.
Right now.
So we both use, you always are bringing up new toys or new tools.
Right.
So it's, I think it's really cool that we include this section. And there's so much going on these days with working from home and new things I'm seeing my colleagues use. So I think it's a great one to add.
It's good. And by the way, your background, if you notice, do you see your background on your left-hand side?
Yeah.
Is that because your door is open back there?
So I'm going to talk about it. Actually, I have a green screen behind me, and I use, for fancier presentations, I want my head to appear on the lower right-hand corner of my presentation, where I've got slides or a demo going on. And then you can see my face talking and my hand gestures. Mm-hmm. So you can see both me and the presentation at the same time. And it didn't used to be that easy. And about a year, 6 months ago, my bunch of sales engineers, Salesforce, we started playing with a tool called OBS, Open Broadcasting Studio Suite. I'm not sure what the S is. And it's free, you download it, and you can basically make a composite video output of what your camera sees, plus what's on your screen, plus maybe things like a little label with your name and title on it, just like you see newscasters on TV. Nice. Mm-hmm. And then you can broadcast that as your screen and, you know, step up what your presentation level is. What you see behind me is I'm using it, but my green screen is twisted out of the way so I can get out of the office. Mm-hmm. And so you can see the back of my office on the left, you know, quarter of the screen. And then 2/3 is mm-hmm. a backdrop.
Yes,
of.
In this open case, it looks like an architectural digest
picture of a, okay.
Yes.
Anyways, that's what's going on. So that's my tool of the trail is OBS. And it looks now, like a lot of, go ahead.
But go ahead, finish your thought.
I just was on a presentation today and we use every tool imaginable at Salesforce to do in-house enablement, training, stuff like that. So today's was on Zoom and Zoom has a cool new feature where the speaker's face hovers in front of all your windows, no matter what screen you're on. Mm. So you might choose to multitask and you can't get away from the speaker's face. And I thought, oh, Zoom, that is so sneaky. That is yes. so cool. Mm-hmm. It removes the need for this speaker, actually. I was working with her yesterday to make sure she knew how to use OBS. They didn't need it. All they needed was to put up slides and Zoom was automatically taking the camera and putting it up in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, and it was effortless out of the box. And so nice. Zoom and others may be adapting to like this more remote presentation mm-hmm. situation.
That's very cool. So I agree. So by your encouragement, I started using OBS about mm-hmm. probably 6 months ago. And the first thing I liked about it is they have a Windows, Mac, and Linux version. So I recently moved to Ubuntu Linux. And so that was great to see. And I do run it every day. One thing I really like about it is similar to Zoom, right? Where you can have, you can essentially have these sets of, they're called, I think, what are they called? Like spaces or what's the term they use for them? Scenes, right? Scenes, you can set up these uh-huh. scenes, right? And each of the scenes can have, you know, like here's an example, right? So this is when there's a birthday on my team, this is the one I put in. And I put a background that has some like faux code that's essentially telling the code to sing happy birthday, right? To a specific person.
So behind you, I see a screen that's zoomed in and looks like it's in VS Code. And there's a for loop that says print happy birthday to you, sleep yes. in 1 second, print happy birthday to insert name here. That's
yes,
cool.
Exactly. Right. And so I like that where you can set up multiple scenes and the scenes can include all sorts of components. They can include a background, the, like you were talking about, right? Some of those footer images, like a title, they can include my video or a separate video stream, right? For example, people who do, they might stream demos and want to record them to, or, you know, broadcast them to YouTube or whatever it might be. I found it to be tremendously, valuable for a lot of different reasons. And I actually use it for recording. So for example, a lot of tools, like let's say the free Google Meet app or others, they don't include recording tools. And many times I'm not the host of the tool that I'm using, but I really would like to record that call. And so OBS enables me to, you know, essentially have like one of my monitors is like what my broadcasted you know, kind of screen is to OBS. And if I'm sending it to OBS, let's say I'm not sharing my screen, but I'm sending it, I can record what you're doing and the audio and everything with it. And so all I have to do for legal reasons, you want to ask people before you record things, but for sure on the recording, I can say, hey, I'd like to record this for my own, you know, use. Is that okay? Sure. They say yes. And OBS allows me to record everything on that screen, including audio, regardless of tool. And I've really liked that.
Cool.
And I've liked how, regardless of tool, whether it's Zoom or WebEx or Google Meet, you know, any of the tools that in the consulting world, right, we're using all kinds of things, blue jeans, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
OBS simplifies everything because it's just a virtual camera, right? And so I don't have to worry about any configuration, about any of those other tools. OBS just normalizes it for me. So thank you for the recommendation.
Cool. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, and I think it's for anybody working virtually now, it really ups your game, and definitely recommend. We'll put the location of the app in the show notes.
Yeah, there's all kinds of videos on YouTube too about how to set it up. I sent it over to my friend who's a professor, and I said, you know, next conference you go to, you got to do this. Next class, you lead virtually, you got to do this. Oh my God, you're killing your students if you're just doing PowerPoint over Zoom for an hour or 2 hours. God, I mean, it just makes it so much more interesting to have the person's face or the animation or whatever you add.
It's really important. Yeah. And that's going to help retention and engagement big time. So my tool of the trail is an app called Shift. And this tool is used for, you know, in the consulting world, we tend to have a lot of identities. You know, and specifically in my space, because I really focus on kind of supporting partners behind the scenes. And so those partners, we have to have identities for those partners. So I have no less than 11 discrete emails and calendars across Google services, Office 365, you know, a couple other webmail kind of clients. There might be other tools like Asana or ClickUp, Google Voice, right? All these web apps, and having all those browser tabs, you know, as you know, keeping a Google account in a browser tab, I can only be in one account at a time unless I do incognito windows, and then they're not all aligned as tabs. They're all separate windows. So what Shift does is it creates this one consolidated app that gives me the ability to create almost like spaces, discrete spaces that don't share cookies. They don't share sessions. So I can be logged into all of my email accounts, all of my calendars across all those services, all at the same time, which is amazing.
Very cool.
And so then I can, you know, have that, I can go look at Shift and I can see, okay, great. I have all my 11 accounts. I can see there's two messages there. There's three messages here, one there. And I get, you know, it's more like 50 there, you know, how it is. And I can go through and just knock those out. And it's been a lifesaver for kind of the multi-identity world of a consultant, especially of kind of a MacGyver consultant who works for a lot of people behind the scenes. It's kind of like a, you know, a fractional jet, if you will. It's been a lifesaver and I really, really recommend it. You know, and it's like $100 a year. It's like, you can't beat the price. It's amazing.
That's a good one.
Yep. So let's talk about what we're excited about, right? Something that inspires us.
I got one, I'm trying to avoid dating this podcast, but I can't. What's really good is we're all vaccinated on my team, on my family, my team, and our friends are vaccinated. And the groups we used to get together with, we haven't seen these people that are like social groups in like a year and a half. And so just recently we met at a park and some people's names I couldn't remember because just a social group where we just see each other, you know, every month. That's what it used to be. But then we didn't see each other for a year and a half. And I'm totally observant and respectful of the Delta variant, and maybe after Delta, I think Eta is the next Greek letter, the Delta, the Eta, the whatever the next letter of variants are of COVID.
It's not Epsilon?
I don't know, dude. I can't remember. Delta, Eta, Epsilon. I think it's,
Kappa?
But... I don't know.
I know. I'm sorry. It's too easy.
it's exciting to be reconnecting with people that we haven't seen in a long time and have new content for our lives of, you know, hearing what other people have been doing and catching up and things like that. And then, you know, if there's a downside, it's like we keep talking about, like, it's back to pre-COVID. We're busier again. And we're going, I got two meetings next week in person with my boss's boss in the city, which is 45 minutes away. So like obligations are percolating back up again too. So, but the excited about part is seeing people face to face is great. Mm-hmm. I've seen team members face to face. I drove through LA. I saw you face to face. You know, that's, that's a really cool thing.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Well, similar to that, for me, actually, too, is going talking about these information signs and just being curious. So I just love, you know, I think I mentioned I love this service called CuriosityStream. It's like the best $3 I spend every month. It's like Netflix, but for, you know, nonfiction, biography, history, cool. nature. And I remember watching this show. This is just an example. What I'm excited about is leveraging seemingly mundane details to inspire other people. And so I watched this show on the Renaissance, and it talked about some noteworthy things that happened during the Renaissance. And I think I've mentioned it before, but double entry accounting happened during the Renaissance. And during that time,
I was a geek about that,
right? It was the first time in history that you could actually verify whether someone was actually wealthy. Cause before that, you just look at their, look at their entourage and look at their jacket and their coat and like their dress.
So you could be a poser.
You could totally be a poser, and you could come up with a really cool, big, audacious idea. Like, let's build a new church right here. Mm. And people thought, well, you look like a pretty viable benefactor. Sure. Right. Let's put everybody's life in danger. Let's totally transform this community with the potential that you will never be able to pay for this,
right?
Because you actually don't have the money, right? Or you have the money now, but it's already indebted to others because it's essentially overpromised.
Exactly.
Yes. Right. Like you are not a bank and you have fractionalized your shekels. Right.
So at that time, this is why you always see in movies, you know, you have a letter of introduction from somebody else. Like you would only know any business with your friends or your friends' friends.
Mm-hmm.
But like a stranger, you're not going to talk to them because you can't do business with them very easily because you don't know what's going on with their money. So you're saying double entry accounting was the first time you could actually
verify,
understand somebody's asset situation.
That's correct. And so I was at an event at the synagogue and somebody introduced their daughter. Like she's home from her first year of college. And I was like, cool. I'm always evangelizing Salesforce, right? I wanted to let everybody know that, hey, whatever your major is, right? Like you could do this on the side. It's kind of like learning to cut hair or anything like that. Like go to Trailhead, get, whether you go into a career or not, all the learning you get, the advanced insight you're going to get when you go to the workplace, because they're going to use Salesforce likely, or they're going to use some kind of CRM. You should do it. Anyways, so I said, you know, what are you pursuing? And she kind of had, with a little bit of a downtrodden sense, like accounting, like it's this boring thing, you know? And like, she was sad, or she like didn't feel like anybody would be excited about it. Right. And so it was so neat to be able to bring up this story and be like, well, that sounds amazing because you know that accounting changed the world. And she was like, what? Right. And her eyes lit up. Right. And I shared this little story about, like, you know, there was a time where nobody could know anything about money and we always had to take people's word for it. And so many projects went bankrupt and never finished because of how inept that process was.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're doing every day is bringing trust, right, to the ability, it's bringing trust to the relationships that people have, and you're bringing verifiable, you know, kind of longevity and commitment to the things that are happening in your business. And you should never feel down about that because that is such an important role. And she was like, you know, totally had a skip in her step. And I just love that the ability to inspire someone about something that's seemingly totally mundane and it's somewhat, you know, a little technical, but is just, it's a little morsel of a little gold nugget, right? To leave with someone. I'm very excited about that and doing that more. And I think that's why I love talking with you. I love, you know, hearing from our listeners and, you know, going into the, you know, Salesforce, groups of various kinds. And, so that was a very inspiring moment for me to help her. And hopefully she goes back, finishes her major and, you know, goes out and continues to change the world with accounting.
Cool. That's a good one.
So I wanted to share one final question I thought we'd have as a bonus for our session today was, you know, it's July and, you know, a lot of people are taking vacations really for the first time they've had in maybe a year, year and a half. And some things might be slow because a lot more people are out of the office. They're not signing contracts, right? So it's a good time to ask, what's a good way to use downtime? Right. So as it relates to kind of people pursuing their Salesforce careers, maybe thinking about, putting their toe in, checking it out, Right. We know there's some big ones, right? Okay. Trailhead, right. All of that. But even that can be overwhelming to people. There's like so many hundreds and thousands of areas to go into now. Right. I'd love to hear kind of what are the kind of top two things. How do you leverage your downtime to really make the most of it?
So I probably have two or three answers. I'll try to keep it quick. For a novice, I would say just, you know, Trailhead has so much content. And my first thought about learning Salesforce is, in general, you're only a few hours away from being a relative expert on any topic in Salesforce. You don't have to know more than everybody. You just have to know more than most people. Mm-hmm. And just by reading the documentation, you will know more than most people. Our documentation's pretty good. It's entertaining. It's fairly complete. There's always room for growth. But in general, I mean, I read stuff today. I was like, I did not know that. I was reading about the data loader and about how the batch setting works in data loader. And so, you know, whenever you see a developer guide on data loader and you use data loader, go check it out. Mm-hmm. That'd be one. In Trailhead, if you have not yet completed admin level one or admin intermediate, like just that's a trail mix that you can go stay on track, knock them out. If you think you know the answer, just take the test at the bottom. If you are not doing well in the test, go back up and read the content because the content on Trailhead is actually pretty good. And then I'd say if you're advanced, I'm a technical person, so I'm going to talk about something called super badges. If you think you can program on Salesforce and do Apex or Lightning or whatever, your next step is to go get a super badge. If you think you know security on Salesforce or integration, go find super badges on those or like the more advanced courses or, you know, Trailheads, because once again, you will be more of an expert than most people just by doing those courses. And then, I mean, between you and me, we're always dropping things on show like, oh, and did you know? And we're like, huh, I did not know that. But John's the next guy I'm going to call next time I have a question. So to me, if you're looking at your Salesforce career, Salesforce skills, that's what I would do. And if you're talking non-Salesforce, off the cuff, I would say go find a Toastmasters group. Mm-hmm. And Toastmasters is fun. Toastmasters is not just for salespeople. Toastmasters is for anybody who wants to be a better speaker. And if you want to stay just an admin the rest of your life and be given simple tasks and without any need to persuade, you don't need Toastmaster. But most people need to be able to string five thoughts together in a persuasive way. And Toastmasters gives you a nice little easy curriculum. You can attend when you can, skip a couple of meetings, come back, and you can attempt these little mini challenges. And I found it to be a super friendly way to polish my speaking skills. What are
That's
you?
That's really good.
What's your
That's
good
really
use
good.
Of downtime?
Well, one, I definitely want to second your, you know, I have my competent communicator, you know, from a first tier certificate from Toastmasters, and those 10 speeches yes. definitely were like a college education for me.
And it was 10 tremendous. Sounds like a lot, but was the first one 30 seconds and the next one was 2 minutes? And the next
yes,
one
exactly.
Five,
right. 10. Yeah. 10 sounds like a lot. And it takes a while to get through because you have to get on the calendar, you know, and that's part of what's good about the group is that in the process of having your 10 speeches, you're also taking on all these other roles, right? You're a Toastmaster one night. You're an evaluator one night. You're the awe counter
counter.
Yeah. The awe counter,
whose
right?
job it is. Somebody keeps the clock or stopwatch.
Yes.
So
you're
like
the timer.
Rules. You remind me. It's so true.
Yes. It's so good. And that really goes into what you covered the Trailhead element. I'll cover the relational side of that. Trailhead can be overwhelming. And so what you want to do is find a trusted resource. And a good location for this is to find your local Salesforce user group, you know, be part of an online, you know, like Salesforce, you know, whether that's Stack Exchange or SFXD or something that is kind of up your alley where you can make some relationships and to ask someone to say, you know, this is the direction I want to go. These are the things I like to do. Where should I start? And I get these questions all the time and help curate for people that, hey, you have these 1,000 resources here based on where you want to go. That really sounds like the sales side of the house, or that sounds like the service side of the house, or that sounds like marketing, or you know, the operations or backend or finance. I mean, there's so many different directions you can go. That's what I'd recommend, is that you find that sense of, you know, somebody who can help curate that for you.
That's a good one.
I said the other element, or the way I use my downtime, is, you know, my day to day, I don't get to do a lot of kind of pondering. You know, things are pretty busy. My calendar, I'm often in kind of edge to edge meetings during the day. And, you know, as a consultant, that's your goal, right? Your goal is to have backlog so that, you know, you look at your week, 2 weeks, and utilization is high. And that's all really good, right? You are definitely refining yourself and being pushed and kind of challenged. But I don't get a lot of just thinking time when I'm not thinking about a client's work. I'm thinking about a client's project. I'm solving their problems, which is good. But I find that the downtime is helpful to step back and to think about, you know, there's a, I'm not sure who said it, but there's an axiom that I think about a lot, which is never confuse activity with progress. And the way that we think about progress is thinking about that bigger picture, right? Because we can have a lot, we're cranking out our to-do list every day, but we're not getting any closer to, like, maybe the person we want to be, or getting into relationships with the people that we want to be, or the goals that we had, right? Financially or personally, spiritually, like, we're not getting any closer to those things, but we feel like we're getting a lot done. And those downtimes are where I start to think about, am I busy in the right direction? Right? Am I busy moving towards the person I want to be, in the place I want to be, making an impact like I want to make? And I found some things that are helpful in that regard are, like, you know, we're driving a little bit more these days. I drive with no sound. So I'll have no stereo, no radio, no podcast, nothing in the car, just as a way to change it up. I'll have lunch with myself. So I'll go and have Chinese food by myself. And I'll try to, like, just put my phone down and just enjoy the food and let the flavor of the food and the smell just kind of, it stokes introspection for me, right? Like, it just gets me thinking, like, this, I love the taste of this food. Do I love the flavor, right, that I'm turning into, that I'm kind of pursuing? So that's helpful for me. And I find it's during the downtime, these months of the summer where it's not so impacted, is a great time to kind of do that introspection and make sure we're not confusing activity with progress, and maybe start something new. Like you mentioned, right? Like getting started, looking into a few hours of Trailhead in a direction that maybe you didn't think we could be a developer, but you know what? Give a super badge a try, because if you're pretty good at that, you might be surprised what you're capable of.
Yep. Yeah. You remind me of two things. Your job at work is not to answer emails. Your job—that's the—that's just the ether of work.
Yes.
That's what you're drowning in. Your job at work is to advance larger projects, and same in your life. I like that you apply it to life too. And it also makes me think of this tiny little book I read called "Getting Things Done." And getting things done, I still use some of the little simplifications that they describe. Like, if you're trying to do something, if it's going to take more than 2 minutes or less than 2 minutes, just do it now.
Do it now. Yes.
If you're not sure what to do next, maybe your next step is figure out what to do next. You know, break your next project down into smaller tasks. Mine all the time is stuff like, make a recommendation on performance to customer X. Well, crap, I don't know what to do there. But first step is, what is performance issue? Break it down. What, you know, what's my framework? How am I looking at performance? Okay, so my first checkbox item is going to be develop framework for customer X. And then look at, so I'm ad-libbing this part, but
yes,
often you just need to carve, if this big chunk of work in front of you is intimidating, you don't know where to start, just pick the first thing that comes to mind off that block and do it, and you can start working on that bigger project. So if it's getting more involved in your community, doing more volunteer work, being a better person, what's the first thing? And you just, often we all just are distracted. We're just not doing it. we could be. We just need to choose to focus on those things, and suddenly we'd be moving in a better direction. So yeah, totally on board with that. That's a
really, really good point. Really good point. And so good. That sounds like a great place to wrap this one up. And another one's in the books. We look forward to your feedback. You can make requests to Eric at
Eywell, Eyewell on Twitter.
And I'm at John Klein. And you can always go to johnklein.com. That's J-O-N and then Klein with C-L-I-N-E. And well, have a great night, Eric. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Good talking to you. I'll see you later.